Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Combined Arms Podcast. I'm Michael.
And I'm Jeff.
We'd really like to say thank you to everyone who has reviewed us on iTunes, followed us on Facebook or Twitter, and anyone else who has chatted with us on email or Facebook or anything like that. So thank you very much for interacting with us this year. First, we're going to start a hobby update, including all the different purchases that we've made and games that we've played in the last month or so.
And then we're going to carry things into a 2017 year in review, and also what we're looking forward to in 2018. So let's kick this off with a hobby update. Michael, why don't you go ahead first?
Yeah, so as usual, I have a lot of stuff to talk about. I have been getting some painting done. I painted 3 Gorgruntas, which are Iron Jaw, Age of Sigmar Iron Jaw models. They are kind of like the old Boar Boys, but they're a lot bigger. They're on, I'm not really sure what the size is, but they're on oval bases that are pretty large. Beautiful models, some of my favorite sculpts. One of the things that really drew me to Iron Jaws was these guys. A little unfortunate that the legs are molded on to the mount, so it's harder to paint everything, especially because they're really crouched over and it's hard to get in little recesses and things. And so, not my favorite things to paint, to be honest with you, but I really like the models after they're done. So,
did you glue them to the base before you started painting?
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah, I do that too. I always I have for the first time I have specifically not glued stuff so that I can paint and then glue it afterwards. Yeah. But we'll see how it actually goes.
So these dudes, if you buy 3 of them, it's like $75. Or you can get the Auric Iron Jaws Start Collecting and it's like $82 and it comes with 3 of those guys plus 10 Black Orcs plus a War Chanter, which is a $35 character. And so I wanted 3 more, so I got the Start Collecting box and sold the War Chanter on eBay.
Right. Yeah.
So I have 3 more ready to be painted, but I did not glue them all together this time. I left off a bunch of pieces to hopefully make it easier. I'm also painting my Gene Stealer Cult models for Adepticon, and also because, to be honest with you, I think the Gene Stealer Cult models are like the best models that GW has released in years and years. I love them. They're really characterful. They're really themey. They look really cool. And, you know, I'm really excited. So I painted, I think, 10 Acolytes, which are not the Neophytes. The Neophytes are like the human-looking dudes with auto guns. Acolytes are more of the, they look more like a Gene Stealer. They have 3 arms. And they have Gene Stealer heads, and they have robes on, and they have an auto pistol and some rock saws, which are amazing. The special weapons that those groups have are so funny looking and awesome. Just dudes carrying TNT and stuff. So I painted 10 of those guys. I have 10 more to paint for my list for Adepticon. I've decided I'm going to do 100 power level friendly game with a goon, somebody from Something Awful, that I played with last year. You played with him as well, Dick. We're going to play a 40K game on Saturday night, so that should be
Oh, nice. Cool. I didn't know he played 40K, too.
I'm painting those guys right now. I also got, so I'm 35. I have 2 kids. I've been married for a while. You know, like, for the past 10 years, I've never really asked for anything for Christmas.
yeah.
You kind of just go into it and maybe you get something that you know, or maybe you just get
a cologne and tie and socks and
Pierce Brosnan cologne or some shit, you know, like
right.
I get stuff when I want it, but also I get presents from people that I don't spend a lot of time with, so they don't really know what I want. Mm-hmm. This year I asked for Necromunda, the box set. Like, mm-hmm. this is the first time I've asked for anything in a long time. And I circled it. Like, I got a GW catalog from the GW store, and I circled it and put it on the counter like 10 times.
Like, you pulled the Red Rider, like, right. hidden in the right. Look magazine kind of thing?
The gaslighting, you know? And
yeah.
So anyway, it didn't work. I didn't get it.
Oh, man. Bummer. Well, now you can buy it for yourself, I guess.
Well... Yeah, I didn't want to, but so I did get a Battle Force for myself, the Gene Steeler Cult Battle Force,
mm-hmm.
which I really didn't need, but I thought was really cool. So, and I got a good price on it, so I bought one. It comes with some more neophytes, which I can use. I gave them shotguns, some more acolytes, which I could use, another rock grinder, which I think is my third one. So that'll be pretty cool. I really like the models, so I'm glad to get some of those. And I might get Necromunda, you know. I have the rules. I got the rules separately on eBay, so
mm-hmm.
We'll see. I played some Shadespire games with Will. We played, I think, a full match, maybe two matches. So we played a full match, Iron Jaws versus Khorne, I believe. And mm-hmm. I think I ended up winning that one. This was a few weeks ago. And then we played another match of... I want to say he played as Stormcast and I played as Skeletons. The Skeletons are so different.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very different.
And we had a lot of fun. I'm really excited to keep practicing for Adepticon. I hope. I was telling Will and Pat, you know, my buddies, I was saying I never really go to Adepticon or even like a local tournament expecting to do well. I just want to have fun, have a good time. Get some games in with people I don't know, which is, mm-hmm. you know, a huge part of it. But really, I hope for Adepticon, you know, to place in the top 50%, you know, because I think I've played it enough and thought about it enough that maybe I can beat out some of the people who are just kind of trying it for the first time or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
are you going to try to jam out some games on Tabletop Simulator?
I might, yeah, we could do that for sure. It once you buy it, but also,
yeah, it keeps popping up as a this thing on your wish list went on sale, and I'm like, I should buy that.
Yeah,
and then you know it goes off sale, and I'm like, I don't want to spend $20 on that. I mean,
so I'm interested to hammer out some more Shadespire either in person or on Tabletop Simulator, and really, you know, just figure out the game and do my best when it comes to Adepticon and have fun. So, Charlie and I have, my son, have been playing Warhammer Quest, and we've been playing it, the actual mobile game. We've been playing it on my PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple, but that's good because he's 5, and
yeah.
You know, he plays as 2 guys, and I play as 2 guys, and it's really fun. It's kind of repetitive, but it's simple and easy and fun, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's I really enjoy it, and set in the old world. Very similar to, you know, the old Warhammer Quest RPG/board game type thing. So there's a little bit of story, and it's not super bloody or anything like that. You know, he's 5, so I don't want to turn him into a serial killer or anything. We did get a 40K game in. I put big game, but it wasn't really that big. It was like 2,000 points on either side.
Michael, what's a point? What are these points that you speak of?
We talked about power levels at first, but we chose to do points.
A bold move.
Yeah. And that's because, so we had our Boxing Day Massacre, which is, we've done in the past.
Okay.
The day after Christmas, I had to take the day off because of work. So we played, and it was 2,000 points of Tyranids and Gene Stealer Cults versus 2,000 points of Blood Angels. And I think the Blood Angels had 2 battalions, and we had a battalion and a patrol. It's the different detachment types in new mm-hmm. 40K.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun. I actually, I took a scenario from Shield of Baal, which was one of the campaign supplements they released in 7th edition that we never mm-hmm. really got to do, and I kind of put it into 8th edition, which really didn't take much work, to be honest with you. The scenario was there's 3 markers in the center of the board that are native populations, and the Tyranids and Gene Stealer cults are trying to capture them or turn them, and the Blood Angels are trying to move them off the board. And every turn, if the Blood Angels are closer to them, they move towards the board edge. If the Tyranids are closer, they move directly away, and that kind of thing. To add in a little bit, there is a, like in the original scenario, it was a warp storm or something that would move 6 inches plus D6 inches every turn from one board edge, and it would kill everything underneath it. So it's kind of a race against time. The Blood Angels have to get the people off the board, and the Tyranids and Gisela cults are either trying to drive them into the storm or actually, you know, go and take them. So really fun game. It was a little unbalanced at first because we got off some really good assaults. We rolled the Steal the Initiative, and the new Tyranid Codex is very good. It's very inspiring. It's kind of what they should have been the last few times. I don't think it's overpowered, to be honest with you. I think just, you know, Carnifexes are good again. Hive Tyrants are really good, and they're scary, and that's maybe what they should be, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
We had a lot of fun. My one of the most 40K things ever happened. I had a Lehman Russ Gene Stealer cult tank, and it was kind of sitting in my backfield, getting ready to shoot downfield. They had two Librarian Dreadnoughts, which are really cool, and Adam flew his Librarian Dreadnought using Wings of Sanguinius, and then charged my Lehman Russ tank. And as he was flying in, I did an Overwatch shot with a multi-melta, scored a hit with a 6, damaged him. He didn't have an invul save. I rolled a 6 for the damage.
No.
And then he came in, did 16 damage to my Lehman Russ with his fist. I rolled a 6 to blow up, and I did 3 mortal wounds to him and killed him. It was very 40K, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So you're kind of back to being able to enjoy 8th edition a little bit more? It's kind of swung back for you now?
Yeah, I think so. I was a little bit down on it because I lost like 12 games in a row with my Gene Stealer cult guys, and I just wasn't having fun. And I think, to be honest with you, maybe the idea is play team games, and I know that was one of the things that independent characters always talked about, because if you have another player on your team, maybe they're playing a better list, or, you know, it's just easier to have fun with a bunch of guys around the table as opposed to I'm here and I'm gonna beat you, you know, like,
right?
I don't know. I think it's harder to lose in the list building phase when you have, you know, 3 other lists on the table, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's just, I mean, whether you lose in the list building phase or not, it's always more fun to lose with another person than just by yourself.
And So this is kind of a shameful secret. I've never read the Eisenhorn books.
That is shameful.
Which are Xenos, Malleus, and it's a trilogy.
Hereticus.
Yeah, Hereticus. Plus, he had a couple short stories or some other things. I've never read Gaunt's Ghosts. I've never read the Ravenor books either. And I always, to be honest with you, I always thought Inquisitors were kind of lame. Like, it's these human dudes and somehow they're super good or whatever. And now I kind of get it. I'm listening to the Eisenhorn trilogy on Audible.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the Black Library stuff is on Audible now. So if you're a subscriber to that, you can get their books on there. And I mean, I think this is well known, but Dan Abnett is just confirming for me again, after I read Legion, which he wrote Legion, right?
Mm-hmm. He did.
Which was an awful book.
Get out of here with that.
So bad.
Get out of here with that.
It was so boring. So anyway,
there's something wrong with your brain parts.
And he also has written comic books and things not related to
I can't take... He, you know, a little something you may have heard of called Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, right. Just some indie comic. I can't take anything that you say seriously when it comes to Black Library stuff, though, because you hadn't read Eisenhorn, you hadn't read Ravenor, you hadn't read Gaunt's Ghost, and you thought that Inquisitors were dumb and didn't get it. So, I don't care what you think about Legion. You obviously
most of the Black Library stuff I've read has been Horus Heresy all the way up. I think I stopped like at the Dark Angels books because they were super boring. Legion was super boring, and then
nope,
and then I have read a lot of other things too, some of the old world books, and I'm reading some of the Age of Sigmar books. But anyway,
well, you should check out the Malice Darkblade books then.
Yes,
since you really like the old world.
I have a giant omnibus, I believe, of that.
Yeah. But you haven't read it yet.
No, it's on my shelf. I'm reading
it. You should read it.
I like
it. It's very good.
C.L. Werner. He has written quite a few books, and I've met him at Adepticon, and so I'm reading. I read his Gene Steeler cult book. It was called Cult of the War Mason. Pretty cool. So anyway, this part is about Eisenhorn. I'm listening to it. Dan Abnett's a great writer. I think Legion may have just been an off day for him.
Or Titanicus was an off day for him. Legion is a masterpiece.
And the Eisenhorn books, so it really revealed to me what an Inquisitor is all about. But also, if you wanted to tell someone what 40K was about, you could hand them the first Eisenhorn book and they would really understand it, because it,
as I have done many times.
Yeah, and I have a bunch of friends who don't like 40K and they've read those books and they love them. I mean, I shouldn't say they don't like 40K. They don't play 40K.
Right.
And it tells you exactly what the world is about. It tells you how everything happens. You know, what's the most dangerous thing in the world, which is chaos or whatever, you know. So, you know, it talks about how space marines are, like, really aloof and, you know, they're huge and the people don't really understand what they're about and that kind of stuff. What the Imperium's about. It's very cool. So I'm going to rate all of those. I'm going to rate the first two books. I'm almost done with the second one. 5 stars, probably. Very cool stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, they're great books. All three of them are fantastic books. I think you're really going to like Ravenor. There are things about Ravenor that I like more than I like Eisenhorn. But
really?
Eisenhorn certainly has a special place in my heart, just in terms of being the first Black Library novels that I read. They're really good books. They do exactly what you're talking about. They can really introduce the reader to the 40K universe. And I think that his kind of kick the door in approach to storytelling really suits the setting well. I mean, you open the first page of that book and you're in the middle of a gunfight. You have no idea what's going on. Right. I mean, it's a chase through you have no idea what. Some kind of weird thing that really takes you out of the modern world and tells you, okay, something strange is happening here. You're in a totally different place, and you just stay there the whole time.
Yeah.
So.
And he also talks a lot about what people are wearing, which is really funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like kind of like American Psycho.
Yeah, there are a lot of body gloves. So.
So I heartily recommend that. Have you read or heard anything about Lord of the Rings Battle Code?
I have read about it. I haven't read the rules or anything, because they're only available in print, and they're more than I'm going to pay for rules for a game that I'm not probably going to play.
So it's tough, because they're not only just print, they're $40, which isn't bad. It's like a thin hardcover, but they're only like direct order. So if you go to a Warhammer or Games Workshop store, they're not going to have it on the shelf. Luckily, my local hobby shop, I had asked them to order a copy, and they're like, oh, sorry, we already placed our direct order. It's going to be a while until we get another one, because it has to be a certain money amount. Anyway, he messaged me yesterday. He's like, oh, we have a copy of Battle Company. So my friend Will had wanted to check it out, and to be honest with you, I mean, I think most people who grew up in the 2000s watched all of the Lord of the Rings movies. Really awesome stuff. Peter Jackson is awesome. Huge set piece battles, and then, you know, small skirmishes and that kind of thing. I had never really taken the Lord of the Rings game seriously, mostly because I was like, well, I could play that or Warhammer.
Right.
So that was kind of a shame, because I've heard the Lord of the Rings rules are really good.
Yeah.
And the whole, like, a lot of the line was sculpted by the Perry brothers, and they're amazing sculptors. So, so long story short, the last year or two, I've always like looked longingly at Lord of the Rings miniatures online and said, wow, it'd be kind of cool to paint some of those dudes and maybe get a game or two in. So anyway, Battle Companies is a skirmish game where you use like 8, 10, or 20 dudes if you're goblins or whatever, and you fight, you know, those kind of little set pieces, like when Boromir and everyone gets ambushed in the, I think in the first Lord of the Rings movie, you know, by the orcs and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's got rules for the good people. So it has Minas Tirith, fiefdoms, Rohan, Arnor, Lake Town, Rivendell, Lothlorien, Halls of Thranduil, Doran's Folk, Iron Hills, the Shire. You can actually be hobbit people, and the models are amazing. Then it has Mordor, Isengard, Harad, Far Harad, Moria, Warg Riders, the Easterlings, Dol Guldur, Goblin Town, Angmar, Corsairs of Umbar. So it has rules for all of those, and they say mm-hmm. that some of the things might be left out, and they'll try to put those in PDF later. And most of those are like less than fewer than 10 models. You paint those dudes, and then later on, as the campaign goes on, you might get some new dudes. But you're not painting Aragorn or like buying a dragon, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So it seems really interesting. I mean, it would be a good way to get into Lord of the Rings gaming. The drawback is, to me, not the $40 that you have to pay for that book, but the $60 that you have to pay for the Lord of the Rings rule book, the hardback.
Yeah, so it's more than that. It's MSRP, it's $80 for in the. So it's really confusing, unfortunately. I had to post in the Reddit thread to figure out what I actually needed to play this game, and it's not on the book, the Battle Companies, and it really wasn't explained well in any of the articles or anything like that. Technically, you need the latest Hobbit Strategy Battle Game rulebook, which is a huge hardback, MSRP $80. Most of your hobby shops probably aren't going to have it. And then you need the codex, or whatever you want to call it, for whichever army you choose. And then you also need this book. However, we've been told they're going to make a new Hobbit Lord of the Rings rulebook in 2018, likely. So I wouldn't advise purchasing those books. I would see if you can get it on eBay or you know, whatever you can do to get those rules. You know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally does. And hopefully this game is not just for people that have a million Hobbit miniatures already looking to play a smaller game. It's for those of us that were thinking about maybe buying a couple Hobbit miniatures and playing a small game. And they've got to get that rulebook thing kind of sorted. Mm-hmm. I don't want to buy a $25 box of miniatures to get my dozen elves, only to pay, you know, $100 or more, it sounds like, for rulebooks. That just does not...
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So hopefully they get that sorted out, because I would be happy to splash into this. The only thing, to me, even if they get that sorted out, is I really want to play Lake Town. And they're all resin miniatures, and it's like $25 for three dudes.
Yeah.
And they may be cool sculpts, but they ain't $25 for three dudes cool.
It's tough, because on GamesWorkshop.com, I'm looking at Minas Tirith, because they were super accessible models. Like, half of the range is out of stock on GamesWorkshop.com.
Right.
Which I don't know if they're never coming back or what, you know? But also... Trying to look on eBay and things, there's not much out there, and a lot of it is very expensive. And a lot of it's pewter or fine cast, which we thought we were kind of past the whole fine cast thing, you know?
Yeah. It would be nice to get these things in pewter at this point, because your only alternative is resin.
Yeah.
So, and I know a lot of us have been hurt before, so.
Honestly, I chose Minas Tirith because they're plastic. I would also do Easterlings because they are plastic, but I haven't found anywhere online to purchase them. And I would the Lake Town guys look cool. So they didn't have plastic dudes in the box set or whatever.
No, there's no plastic Lake Town miniatures, because they're later Hobbit releases, which most of those were resin. Unfortunately, there's only a couple of the plastic kind of starter sets or whatever. So. Yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer. I mean, I could see myself using the elves, just paying $25 or $30 or whatever for a box of elves, if I could also pick up a, you know, softback rule book. And I, you know, that $40 is still a tough sell. So I don't know, but we'll see.
To be honest with you, we'll see what happens. It's so apparently this was done in White Dwarf a while ago, like Battle Companies was a White Dwarf thing. I think a lot of it's cribbed from that. And there's scenarios and there's experience rules, but there isn't a whole lot to it, to be honest with you. All of that said, I'm excited to try it out. I want to see if it's worth it. That's why I paid $22 with free shipping for these 10 Minas Tirith guys. So it's not bad at all, you know? And I want to try it out and see if it's worth it. And then maybe I'll get some other guys at some point. Maybe Games Workshop will invest more into it. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of rumors and all that stuff about the profitability and all of that things, but who knows?
Sure. Sure.
I have a couple more things that I want to do a mini review. I've been playing an AOS campaign, Age of Sigmar campaign with my son, who's 5. He's playing his Seraphon guys, who are also known as lizard men. He loves those guys. He calls them his little dinosaurs, and he always wants to play.
Nice.
And I've finally started painting my guys, so it'll look a little bit better, you know, for the pictures and things. We're going to do, I think we're going to stick to the skirmish mode for now because it's really easy and it, you know, requires fewer models. I did purchase some Chessex dice. So I got 30 Gene Stealer Cult dice with my custom Saviors logo. The Saviors is my Gene Stealer Cult. It's like a Gene Stealer Cult icon with a little mining pick in the end of its hand. I think it was like $28 shipped to my house from Indiana or something like that. And they're beautiful. So they're really nice dice. Definitely recommend it. You can just, if you Google custom Chessex dice, it'll take you right to that page.
Was it hard to order them? I mean, you have to like plan it all out and send them an email with the file and all that kind of stuff.
I've ordered probably 5 or 6 sets of Chessex dice like this. So it's not hard for me, but really you email the guy, he sends you back all of the information he needs. So if you just had like a 500 pixel image from Facebook, I think it would be hard, but I was able to use a vector image. I have a vector image of what I wanted, which is really easy for them to put into their product. So I don't think, honestly, if you have a good picture, he sends you a one up, or he sends you a sample and you look at that. And if it's bad, then I would expect you could say, I don't want that one. I want something else. So. I also played the Thing board game. So this is from the Kurt Russell movie from the 80s, and they're in a station down in Antarctica, and an alien UFO comes out of the ice and infects everyone. And great movie from the 80s. Great movie. I love it. I actually watched it again the other night after we played. Board game is kind of a bluffing type of game where one person is an imitator and everyone else is not, and you have to do missions and eventually you have to figure out who's the imitator, and then sometimes another person becomes an alien too and that kind of thing. So really interesting.
Do the aliens know each other or
no? No, they do not.
That's interesting. A hidden traitor kind of thing where they don't know each other,
and they can like throw a mission by putting in a sabotage and that kind of thing. So it's really interesting. It was really fun. We played with 4 people, but apparently you want to play with 8 to get the best experience.
Wow, that seems like a lot of people to get the best experience out of a board game, though.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a huge board gamer, so 8 people even 4 people to get it, the minimum is like, well, I don't know if I want to buy this, you know?
Yeah, that seems like a long game, 8 people.
I don't think it would be very long, because it goes pretty quick. It's more about decision making. You know, who do I want to send on this mission? Get rid of cards and that kind of thing. So there's table talk.
I was going to say, my best question for any kind of licensed game like this is, how good is it for someone who either doesn't know or knows of it but isn't particularly interested in the licensed property? Is it still a good game on its own?
Yeah. I mean, the mechanics are sound. You don't have to know, you know, a whole lot about it to figure it out. You're in an ice station and the power's going out and there's fire starting and that kind of thing. So I think you would have a fun time. I wanted to do a mini review, and this is my last thing, of Company of Iron. So this came out in November, and it's a skirmish rule set for War Machine and Hordes. So the scope is around 10 or 20 models. It's actually pointed out separately and differently from regular War Machine. So you build your little company of iron, and it probably in the War Machine app on your phone, and then you select a leader. You don't have any heavy war jacks or gargantuans or colossals or anything like that, and cavalry are not in it. And then if you take, there are some models that have obviously better rules for a skirmish, and so if you take those models, you get, it kind of dings you at the end where you have a smaller hand size for the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a kind of an interesting way to balance the game. So your leader of your force is a unit leader. So you don't have a warcaster or a warlock. You have a unit leader as your leader. The rules are pretty much the same as War Machine and Hordes, but your models move one at a time instead of as a unit. And it has alternating activation, which is amazing. I love War Machine and Hordes. I think it works fine without alternating activation, but I always like to see a game with alternating activation. So I move a guy, then you move a guy, I move a guy, then you move a guy, etc., etc. It has injury status. You have wounded, injured, and out. It's kind of similar to Old Necromunda in that respect. If you run up to someone who's wounded and you hit them in close combat, then they go out, I believe, that kind of thing. One of the coolest parts about it is there are command cards, and this is a deck of cards. Everybody gets the same deck unless, you know, later on they release faction-specific cards, but there's 40 command cards, and you can either use a command card in your turn to do something special, like there's one called Onslaught. Choose a friendly model or unit. Chosen models gain assault during their activations this turn. That means they can shoot and then charge, I believe. Or the same card you can actually use to boost. So at the bottom it says boost. Play this card to boost an attack or damage roll. So obviously that one is a little less specific than the top one, and it only affects a minor portion. But if you didn't want to use the top part of the card, you can always use that boost card.
Wait, what does a boost do?
You add a die to either your attack roll or damage roll. So you're
okay. So it's just a much more flexible thing that you can use for.
Exactly.
It's like a generic. Right. Okay, I got
you. It's kind of like in other board games where you know you discard a card to gain a bonus or something like that. You know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So it's really interesting, and the command cards are great. They are really cool. You have a hand of, I want to say, 5 cards, unless, like you said before, if you take a model that is really good, you might have a hand size of 4 cards or a hand size of 3 cards, even down to like 1 card if you take like certain special characters, that kind of thing. I did end up buying the box set. It was $75. It came with, let's see, it comes with Signar models, Lieutenant Gwen Keller. So she is actually a new model for this box set. 6 Stormblade infantry and 3 Storm Gunners. So 10 Signar models. And then it comes with 11 Pharaoh models. Pharaoh are the pig people. They are Hordes, and Signar are obviously War Machine. And in that, it comes with Agata, Queen of Carnage. She is a female Pharaoh with 2, like, hand dagger things, and she looks really cool. And then there's 10 Pharaoh brigands, which are kind of your basic Pharaoh trooper. They have blunderbusses and hand weapons. So you get 21 models in the box. You get 40 cards. You get a bunch of tokens, which really, to be honest with you, I wanted the box because of the tokens. All the injured things, the objective markers, the activated tokens, and that kinds of stuff I wanted. They do encourage you to use more terrain. It's played on a 30 by 30 board, so you use more terrain to kind of make sure it's more interesting. You're not just shooting straight across the board. They talk about all kinds of battles inside towns, which you don't really see so much in War Machine and Hordes, so that's kind of cool to get into a town and play. The scenarios are really cool. There are a lot of theme scenarios, and I have to say, they just relaunched their magazine. It's now called Prime instead of No Quarter. And in the first two issues of Prime, I want to say there's six or seven different scenarios for Company of Iron, plus some fiction. So that's really cool. They're supporting it. It's not just a splash release that they'll get forgotten about later. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really seems like they are kind of pushing for it. I mean, there's a bunch of box sets for the different factions.
Yes.
So that you can jump right into this. It looks like maybe $100, $115, if you just want to get the faction box. And the rules are free on their website. I mean, I actually read through, not completely through them, but a good number of them. And it does seem like a great game. I mean, it definitely seems like the game that I wanted War Machine to be,
mm-hmm.
When it first came out. So it's interesting. I don't know that I'll be buying models for this. I was kind of hoping to use some of the models that I've gotten from the little starter boxes, but I think the way it's worked out with the Warcasters and the Jacks and stuff in those boxes is probably not going to happen. But I would definitely give it a shot if somebody else had it around to give it a try. Because, I mean, like you said, playing, that kind of street-to-street skirmish combat, that's kind of what I wanted from War Machine, and that's just not what that game is. So
yeah, and it comes with, you can get the rules for free, or you can get the core rules, advanced rules, and scenario guide, plus the cards for like $15 from Privateer. They're smaller. They're kind of like a pamphlet size. They're not a huge soft cover, but they're nice rule books. So I'm really excited. So some of the pros, it is cheap. It's only $15 for the rules and cards, or it's free online. And then you can buy your unit cards for your faction in War Room, which is the app, for $3. And I, to be honest with you, I really loathed War Room when it first came out, but it's much better now. It's really fun to play. It's fast. You can play a game really quickly. It has alternating activations. It's an easy way to get some really narrative-focused games, which is not necessarily everything with War Machine and Hordes. I think this is a way for them to really focus in the narrative. It does have the tight gameplay that you get from a regular War Machine and Hordes game. It's a great way to create some really themey models. So I'm actually looking at new ways to do Scorn stuff, as well as other factions. Just a little quick Company of Iron from Krix, or a Company of Iron from Signar, that kind of thing. The new character models in the box are really cool, and I already talked a little bit about the Prime magazine support. Some of the cons, the negatives of the game, you still have to buy units for your list, so you can't just buy one Cataphract or one Incendiarii or one Slinger. You have to buy like five Cataphracts or five Slingers or whatever, which is a little weird. But it works, it works in the end. There isn't a campaign system built in, though you could create one, and I know people have created some. I hope some of the goodwill towards the game has interested them in maybe creating their own campaign system from Privateer.
Mm-hmm.
Some abilities in the game seem very powerful in terms of skirmish. Things like Stealth, where I can only shoot you if I get 5 inches away from you. Weapon Master, where I'm going to do huge amounts of damage. Quick Work, where I can kill a model and then get an advance and shoot another model. Some of those things seem very powerful in Skirmish, and I think you would figure that out pretty quickly. And then the last thing, it's not really a negative or a con, it's just something I'd like to see. I would love to see them put out rules to create a leader for your force. So not just, okay, this guy is a Scorn swordsman and he's my leader. I would like to create my own named leader and give him little rules and figure out, what equipment he has and that kind of thing. I've already gone on the Privateer website, and one of the coolest things they do is they sell the parts for every model, most models that they sell. So
right.
I bought a body, and then I had all these different weapons I want to add to it and that kind of thing. So that would be cool if they put that in there. So I think it's a good way to get new people in, but also a good way to grab, players who maybe played in the past and have some models sitting around and they just want to give it a try.
Do you feel like War Machine and Hordes in general has taken a hit over the last year or so?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't hear as much chatter about it as I used to.
I hate to generalize, but I do once in a while, and I think, you know, I mean, I've talked to my friends who love War Machine and Hordes, and they've told me that the combination of kind of a tough launch for Mark III in terms of, you know, some it wasn't what some people wanted, as well as one or two of the factions being really bad, plus 40K getting a new edition and some other things. It seems like the population has slowed down a little bit, but you know, you read that kind of stuff, and sometimes it comes with a bias and that kind of thing. So in general, I think, yes, it has gotten smaller, but I think things like this will only, and you know, the new Prime magazine is beautiful and it comes with a lot of great stuff. So I think they're putting things in back into the game that should build that population back up.
Okay, that'll be interesting to see what happens then.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything else, or?
Oh, one other thing. My son is 5 and he's in kindergarten, and he started getting Pokemon cards from his friends, like they would give them to him. So I bought him some Pokemon cards, and you know, I've played the Game Boy games once in a while, and I enjoy them. My brother has put hundreds of hours into them, and so I got him some Pokemon cards for Christmas. And he's been putting them in his album and sorting them. And it's really good because he can't really read yet, but he can. He's doing math, and that's really good. I think he likes math a lot. And like we just played a little 30-card deck versus a 30-card deck. I said, okay, Charlie, you have 80 hit points, and this does 40. So what does that equal? And he's in kindergarten. And he says, well, 4 plus 4 is 8, so 40 plus 40 is 80. So he could... He's figuring out the math, and that's really cool. You know, as a dad, to see one of the funniest thing was, I said, "Okay, show me your hand."
he held his hand out.
He did not hold his hand of cards out. He showed me his hand, it was really funny. But it's the game is very simple and easy, which is great, and I'm sure that's how they sell thousands of cards to children. and you know, it's just cool. He loves talking about the legendary Pokemon. Like he hardly knows anything about it, but he thinks, you know, the legendary Pokemon, he has to talk about them all the time. So, it's funny, but anyway,
so what you're saying is all of your hobby progress is going to be consumed by helping him paint his dinosaurs and also you playing Pokemon the card game.
Yeah. The good thing about Pokemon the card game is it's quick to set up and quick to play, which is like, you know, if I set up an Age of Sigmar battle, he'll be done by turn 2 and I'll have to put everything away and it'll take longer than it was to actually play. So
yes, card games are awesome like that.
yeah and they're also, you know, as a dad, I can say, all right, you're gonna wear your slippers all day today, and if you do that, I'll give you a pack of Pokemon cards.
So, the best compliance $4 could buy.
Right. I found some packs online that are 3 cards, so I can, you know, kind of use those.
You can dole them out a little bit. So on the one hand, this is very good because it's you're using variable schedule rewarding. It's kind of the randomized effect is built into the cards themselves. On the other hand, you're teaching him gambling from a very young age by handing him these randomized packs. So yeah. just be careful. Just know which end of the tiger you got this thing by, okay?
Yeah. They're still really, I mean, kids love Pokemon. They love it.
I don't have as much as that, shockingly. So I did finally get my first set of starter pirate force done. So it's about 100 points. Not done. That's silly. I got them base coated and washed so that they're tabletop ready. I mean, they look good as they are. I got a couple good pictures up on the Facebook group, and I'm proud of having gotten them that far because it's been a long time since I've painted that amount of models. And these guys are a little bit tougher, I would say, than painting most armies, because it's not uniform. Each guy is individual, which makes it a little more fun to paint, but it also, of course, takes a little bit longer. I could batch paint them, but I just, that style tends to just wear me down more, and so I just won't ever get it done that way. So being able to just do one guy from start to finish and then, you know, let him dry for a minute and then put the wash on and walk away seems to really be a good strategy for me. So I've also started now on cleaning up the metal figs for the next 100-point starter. So I was going to try to build out, you know, build more up around the one that I had started. And then I decided to go ahead and build a second one up and get that painted to the same level so that I would have two, you know, opposing forces. Well, as it kind of turns out, because the first one I did was the Brethren of the Coast, and the second one is the English Buccaneers, there's so much overlap in terms of which models I can take between the two of them. I'm really killing two birds with one stone. So that's going to be pretty good, I think. If I ever paint, I'll only have to paint like four more models or something like that to kind of get where I need to be. So,
yeah, I think they look great. You sent me those pictures. Yeah, thanks, man. I think they looked awesome. So you don't batch paint at all?
Not unless I have to. I don't usually like to. It just doesn't go very well for me. I mean, I have done it in the past, but a lot of times, even when I'm batch painting, it'll only be like five dudes at a time.
Yeah. I have to paint. We'll talk about it later, but I have to paint my English militia, so they're going to be somewhat regular.
Yeah, I think once I do the militia models, they'll be a little more regular. There was a guy who posted, I want to say it was this morning, actually. He was working on his French militia, and so he had gone in and basically done some very basic color plates for himself so that he had kind of a pool of, like, jackets and pantaloons and, you know, breeches and whatnot, and just these little color schemes kind of already planned out. You just sort of pull them out of the quiver so that you get a variety, but it still looks somewhat uniform because they're kind of like a unified, each individual model would be a pre-planned color scheme, if that makes any sense. So it would be like a white coat with red cuffs and red breeches or that kind of thing. So
I do that.
Okay. Yeah. So this one, I actually saved the post because I think it's a pretty neat idea. So the way that he did it, you know, there's like white coats and gray coats and different color cuffs and all that kind of stuff. It really helps me. I'm a paint by numbers kind of guy. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to come up with his own, you know, Space Marine chapter or Craft World or whatever and just go out and paint it. I'm going to look at a picture or something and I'm going to paint what I see in the pictures as best I can. So that kind of thing's super helpful for me. Yeah, man, this, I got to get some more Army Painter Strong Tone because I'm just about out. Because I put that stuff on everything. So.
It's really good.
Yeah. I've had to kind of switch over to my Agrax Earthshade bottle, which I tend to use because it's a big bottle. I tend to use that more for terrain. I think that it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, you know, for just slopping on brown.
They're very similar.
Yeah, it's not a big deal between the two of them. But I do like the way that the Strong Tone just, I don't know. It's preference, I guess. I kind of like that.
It's really good. It's a dip for a lot of, it's kind of a dip. I mean, they sell it in a dip format, and it is something that you can just kind of throw on there and then clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Army Painter ones do smell like dead animals still.
I'm just using the dropper bottles. I'm not using the tin cans, so.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm not doing that either, but even then.
Oh, yeah?
You open that little bottle and it smells like the world ended.
Huh.
It's awful.
That sounds terrible. I must really like the smell of dead animal though, because I'm digging it. So speaking of painting, I've also been working on Shadespire a tiny little bit. So I started painting the skeletons. I did not get very far before I kind of got bored and moved on to something else. But I did get the Oryx for Christmas, so I got those assembled earlier today. And those guys, I actually intentionally did not glue them to their bases, which is kind of weird because their feet are attached to the bases and they kind of stick the ankles into the feet. But I left those off for ease of painting. And then on the boss guy, I don't know, Sir Ironjaw or whatever his name is, he's got a one hand kind of across his body with an axe in it, so I left that unglued. And then the great thing about these SnapFit models, and I would say that out of all the ones that I've put together, that the Iron Jaws are the best kit, and maybe just the best box in this game so far. I think they're a really strong force. I think they're fairly consistent in their performance. I think the cards that they come with are some of the best in the game. I mean, there's stuff in there that if you never play the faction, there's cards that you're going to want. I mean, things like Shard Caller if you're playing objectives, Demonic Weapon, Daylight Robbery. I mean, there's just stuff. You just need to buy that box. So if you are on the fence, I think, about playing Shadespire, you know some people that have enough stuff as far as boards go and whatnot that you just want to buy a box to get into it, I think that's definitely the box. I mean, you want to get the Iron Jaws and then maybe the dice to go with it. And you could play that one right out of the box, and I think you could do just fine with only the cards that are in there with those Iron Jaws. I cannot say the same for the skeletons. I think you need a lot of other cards for the skeletons to work. But the Iron Jaws, they're like faction-specific cards, are really good.
I've played with Iron Jaws most of my games, and they are really interesting. Lots of action economy cards in there.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And they're tough.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like how they molded the feet onto the bases.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fine. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to put them on different bases or anything. So I'm totally fine with it. But I think you're totally right about the action economy, because the action that you're gaining a lot of times is an attack, which is, of course, super valuable for a faction that wants to be attacking as much as they do. So yeah, they're really good. I think those faction specific cards are going to really push out some of the other kind of staple generic cards that you would normally include in a deck. And it's going to be, you're gonna be really tight for deck slots in that one. But so I'm looking forward to playing it. I haven't gotten a chance to play with them yet. I've mostly been playing with the Reavers against Lisa playing the Stormcast Eternals, and man, Reavers are just hard to play against Stormcast. They're just a very difficult faction, I think, to win with. Even when things kind of fall in my favor, they're just not really great at anything except for moving. So,
yeah.
I mean, really, really hard to win with.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I've played as the Bloody Boys against Stormcast a couple times, and it's just really hard.
Yeah, not that I can't win a game or anything, but it just feels more difficult than it really should. I have a feeling that if we switched and she was playing the Reavers and I was playing Stormcast, there would be some really unfun games going on. So I don't mind the challenge. I'm happy to keep playing the Reavers, but I did play a game with my skeletons, and I think it's just... I just prefer that. I think the models are a little cooler. I think that the skeletons have a different play style from all the other factions, and that makes them kind of interesting. And mm-hmm. I think they're one of the factions that you can really go in a number of directions with. We saw that the winner of Blood and Glory took them in a very killy direction, whereas a lot of people, you know, take them towards objectives and that kind of stuff. I think they are kind of flexible like that, because you have enough guys, and the fact that you can bring guys back that die, and as a matter of fact, it's your inspire condition anyway, so it makes them better to do so. Makes them very forgiving as long as you don't get your warden killed. So yeah, right. Still really enjoying Shadespire. I wish I had some more players around me that were into it. We were just talking before recording. I don't really have a game store nearby. Probably about 45 minutes or so is the closest game store. So it's one of those things where I wouldn't just like swing by after work one day hoping that someone would be there who wants to play the game that I want to play. I would have to set something up ahead of time and, you know, make an afternoon of it or whatever.
And they did, I don't know if we talked about this in the last episode, they did release an FAQ and errata that kind of fixed a number of pressing issues, including the time trap, you know, issue for a lot of people. So that was cool.
Yeah. It seems like all the major, so there's still weirdness out there. The ploy card that lets you like re-roll No, which one is it? It's the one that lets you reroll a missed attack or something in combination with the fighters that can attack everyone around them. Still causing some problems because they don't all work exactly the same way because of the wording on the cards and stuff like that. So there's still some weirdness in the game, but hopefully they get that kind of resolved as more people play it. Hopefully, definitely by Adepticon, I'm thinking they'll have enough, yeah. Large and small events out of the way so that the mega event can run pretty smoothly. I just want the players to be able to know what the deal is before they get there would be, you know, kind of the best thing for that.
Right.
So other than that, I will say again that I am still very much enjoying that game. I mean, it is a good game. And if you have any doubts, find somebody that can do a demo with you, because I think you will enjoy the game. And I don't know that just reading it or reading about it is going to really tell you kind of the depth of experience that you can get out of that game. I mean, it is much deeper than it looks on it on paper. So
I would definitely agree.
I did play Chain of Command for the first time, and this is a first for a couple, for me in a couple ways. It's the first real game of World War II that I've played, kind of in any scale. I did play one time a sort of demo game of Bolt Action with some like unpainted dudes on a board or whatever. So this is the first real game where it, you know, full terrain, fully painted, all that kind of stuff. Like Ron has run this game at conventions before, I think. If he hasn't run it before, I think he's gearing up to. So, you know, the presentation is there and all that kind of stuff. So first time with Chain of Command. It does have a lot in common with Sharp Practice, but certainly not the same game. I mean, it obviously works very differently in different places. I had a lot of fun. I thought it was a great game. The patrol phase, I think, is really neat. Our patrol phase kind of ended up, you know, you just have a line across the board. I think there are some really neat things that could happen in the patrol phase, just depending on what the players end up doing. You know, taking some different actions than what we did. I think it's tough. It's a tough game. Two Fat Lardies games in general, I think, are a tough game for beginners. I don't know if it's a great convention game for first-time players. I mean, I can have fun with the game as a beginner, but I am certainly not going to get kind of the tactical depth that's there. I just don't know enough about what I'm doing. It's one of those things where you kind of have to know all of the rules in order to take advantage of any of the rules, if that makes sense. I don't really mean take advantage, you know, in terms of like cheating or anything like that, but just, I don't know how survivable anything is. I don't know what these kind of jump off points are going to do for me. I don't know where to put my guys, what order to bring them out, that kind of stuff. It's very, very tough to kind of figure out. So thankfully in this one, it was a team game. We had some guys there that had played before, and Ron, you know, was helping kind of, let me know what's what, but I could see this one being a little tough. What do you think about that for a first-time participation game at a con with Chain of Command?
For Chain of Command, so I did this. I actually, at Fallen, I played Chain of Command for the first time. I've read through the rule book once or twice, kind of off and on, and I'm familiar with Sharp Practice. I think the patrol phase is really cool. I think it's inspired. I think it's totally different from a lot of other things, and it also serves to shorten the game a little bit, because you're not, you know, march, move, march, move, march, move, march, move, okay, now we're fighting.
Yeah, especially with D6 moves.
Yeah, right. And so I like the patrol phase. The thing I got confused about, and it was because maybe I just didn't think about it the right way, was the different teams and how they work. And I think, honestly, with Sharp Practice and Chain of Command, a lot of the special things you can do, like doubling your fire or whatever, you have to use, you know, a resource, cards or dice or whatever, to do that. And I think if you don't have them, what you can do in front of you, it makes it a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a good quick reference sheet and that kind of thing can help out. But I think maybe, I mean, I'm an unabashed fan of Two Fat Lardies games. And I think for some people, it may take them one or two games to really understand. And especially they have a good teacher to understand, you know, here's everything that I can do. I kind of agree with you on that. I think, you know, I was thinking about it the other day. I've done my best to really figure out how to explain the different things. And I don't think it's a complicated game. I think there's just they come at things a lot differently than maybe what we're used to, especially as people who come from Games Workshop or whatever, whereas, you know, kind of a big box type of game idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think it is just kind of due to the uniqueness. Because the game is sped up, you know, due to the patrol phase and the jump off points and things like that. I don't know that it's as forgiving of mistakes, like deployment mistakes, as another game would be, because you're already there, right? I happen to do, you know, me and the other guy I was playing with happened to do pretty well in the game. You know, a lot of it was dice going in our favor and whatnot. So, you know, I don't have any complaints about that. I don't feel like I made any huge mistakes or anything, but I could see how having just done poorly that early in the game would really, you know, set you downhill, and it might leave a bad taste in your mouth if it's the first experience you've had. So, I don't know. Would you want to do an alternate deployment style for a convention and just say, hey, you know, this is one of the things that our group has talked about, is that you actually have to secretly assign units to your jump off points, you know, before the patrol phase even finishes, that kind of thing, where you're sort of locked in and you actually are maneuvering those elements around the board, but your opponent just doesn't know what's what. And so you've got like dummy markers and things like that if you choose to do it that way. But would you think about doing that for a convention where you've already got things kind of pre-assigned so that nobody does anything absurdly stupid and just gets killed in the first turn?
I might help them assign, you know, or pre-assign which teams are going to which jump off point, but I would let the players do the jump off point.
Mm-hmm.
Thing.
Yeah,
I don't think that's very confusing at all.
Yeah, no, I don't know that it's confusing so much as just like if you do it poorly,
screw things.
Yeah,
up. Yeah. I definitely screwed up my jump off points, not entirely, but it made it harder in our first game. So yeah, and I might help the players to figure out really, you know. Okay, you're doing this, and this could really make it very hard for you, so let's figure out a different route or something like
that. Yeah, the way the leaders work, where you might go turns without wanting to even bring your leader on, you know, because you don't want to commit them quite yet, because you don't really need them, you know, standing right there quite yet, that kind of thing. I don't know that that's something that a beginner is going to kind of intuit just from walking up to a table and somebody hands you a quick reference sheet. And even if they explain things fairly fully, I think that would be a tough part to sort of pick up on the fly.
Yeah. The guy who was helping us, learn the game was definitely very helpful in that regard. So,
yeah,
you know, leave your leaders off because they don't need to come on yet. And also they're going to help your tank come on and that kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Right. And like I said, I mean, I got a lot of help too, and, you know, things were fine in the game, but, you know, I needed that help, and like standing there looking at the table, it wasn't something where, you know, I went to put something in a poor spot and he had to say, hey, don't do that. It was, I just stared at the table and I'm like, I have no idea what I should be doing. And part of it too is probably me not knowing World War II very well either. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know this platoon from that platoon or support weapons. And they're like, oh yeah, that's a Piat. And I'm like, well, okay, so I should go shoot those guys over there. They're like, no, you should shoot that tank over there. You know, I don't know.
It's
it from Adam. So
you do have to use smoke to cover your advance. If you run out into the open, your guys are going to get shot down. I don't know if I had a lot of options, but I got into a firefight at medium range with Germans, and they had a bunch of LMGs and good leadership, and I had paratroopers, but they didn't have that kind of firepower or leadership. And so, you know, there are things where you have to fight like they did, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not, I don't know what I would have done in that specific scenario, mm-hmm. because, you know, I had to protect something at all costs.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, in this scenario, we were, as British paras, we were the defenders, and it was a D-Day counteroffensive, I believe, by the Germans attacking the British. Not D-Day, but I guess, you know, the days following the invasion of Normandy there. But I got into a pretty close range firefight. I had some guys in a barn, and he had guys in the farmhouse, that kind of thing. But because the mm-hmm. paras were sort of elites or veterans or whatever, whereas the Germans were just using regular guys, I got the best out of that exchange just because it was very difficult for him to kill my guys. And they sort of got kind of fixated on that fight and kept putting resources into it and putting resources into it. And I wasn't really, you know, we'd lose like one model or two models or whatever, while, you know, putting a lot of shock on them and making them kind of combat ineffective. So yeah, I mean, it was fun. I definitely want to play it some more. And I'm glad that I have a game group now that has World War II models, so I don't have to necessarily invest in the period to be able to play it. Everything's ready to go. These guys, you know, it's a period that they really enjoy and that they've gamed a lot in the past. So, you know, it's a good way for me to kind of get that experience without having to, you know, lay down a big investment. So I'll definitely be picking those rules up, you know, at some point in the future, just to have to, you know, flip through at the table and stuff.
Yeah, there it's a great rule set. The book is pretty. So
you think they'll you think Rich and those guys are going to do a second edition anytime soon?
I don't want to opine on that because I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think I saw a tweet that said he had something like 1,000 copies left or something like that, and they'd have to do another print run, which is good because mm-hmm. that means they're selling things.
Yeah.
And they're also every special that they do, the Christmas and the summer special, are packed with Chain of Command stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they've done a ton of different little pint-sized campaigns. So that is the game that I think they've supported the most,
mm-hmm.
From my point of view, is Chain of Command. So there's so much stuff out there for you.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to do historical rules, you might as well do the most popular historical period. So,
right.
So we've got a new player in the group, Vincent, who's been around with us for a couple weeks now. And he's got a ton of Battlestar Galactica miniatures. So this is like a fleet type game, going back to your... you know, your trader games and whatnot. This one did not have a trader mechanic in it. It was just sort of a fleet engagement where we had a couple of the big Cylon, the base stars, and the humans have to kind of hold off an attack long enough to make the jump to FTL. It's one of those things where you sort of hit a certain turn and then you start rolling randomly to see if you can jump to FTL. So that was a lot of fun too, and it looked really, really good on the board. I mean, you had a lot of great miniatures all painted and everything. You play it on a hex grid space board, so it's really cool to do that as well. A lot of like missiles and torpedoes and stuff flying everywhere, which are, you know, little models or whatever. But then he did cotton off of the end of it. It just looked really, really neat. So that was a fun game too. Yeah, it was a very, very easy rule set, but it just played really well. That I think is a fantastic game for a con. You know, it looked really great. The rules were really easy, and it really captured, you know, the feeling of that type of engagement.
Is it new Battlestar Galactica or
well
like seven like
Ours was bowl new, cut. But he's got all the stuff to do either one. So
okay.
we played the new version. Also been playing some more 7TV. So this is the first game actually that I played with the guys last year when I kind of first joined the group. And so it's sort of become a holiday tradition for us to do a nice Christmas theme game of 7TV. And so in this one, Department X and Shiva were both responding to a crashed UFO in London. It turns out it was Santa's sleigh. So they're both trying to, you know, take a hold of Santa. He's the objective in the game. So we had a lot of fun with that. And 7TV is always a fun game. One of the things that we found as a group is that there's a lot of cards in it. You haven't played 7TV, have you?
I have not. I've read about it in magazines and things.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun. There's a lot of cards and stuff that kind of drive the game forward. The timer in the game is a deck of cards, and so you draw one at the beginning of each turn, and if you want to kind of push the clock forward, you can choose to draw two, that kind of thing. And then they have random effects where, you know, it might be that the some of the terrain moves because it's like a scenery, you know, mistake, or one of the stars might fall in love with a star on your opponent's force, or you know, all kinds of stuff. But it's all, you know, you're filming a television show, so it's all themed to that. So that's always a fun game. It's very light. It is one of those games though where you kind of need to know what all of your units do. So there's a lot of rules like on the front of the card and the back of the unit card and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of nested activation type things where you activate this leader who can then activate these other guys at a discount or for free or only within 8 inches, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
that's cool.
You sort of need to know your force. Speaking of which, we also played some Guild Ball pretty recently. And that's another one of those games where you just kind of have to know your force. And then in order to do well, you also need to know your opponent's force. So there are three of us that kind of really enjoy the game. Two of the guys have bought in really, really heavily. I haven't bought in yet. I'm kind of waiting for the fisherman to go to the plastic box rather than the $75, you know, so-called starter box. So yeah, to me the $35 starter is really where it's at for kind of a splash game like that. So when that happens, I think I'll pick up the fisherman box. But it is such a fun game. I really enjoy playing the game. This last time it was only the three of us there, so I was watching the game, but I'm just sitting there, and the whole time it's like, well, what if you do this and what if you do this? You know, thinking that in my head. And you know, go ahead.
It's very tight, very tactical.
It is.
Models are really cool.
Yeah. And it just, I don't know, it just clicks with my brain. Like, I just feel like I can see things to do. I don't know if they're the right things because I'm not very experienced in the game, but I like the fact that I can just sit there and watch it and the wheels just start turning automatically. Just, you know, as soon as kickoff goes, I'm like, well, if I activated this guy next as opposed to activating this guy next, what's he going to do? It's very chess-like, which has not in the past been the kind of game I like to play, but for whatever reason, Guild Ball really does it for me. And it also has alternating activations, which I think are just a huge, huge part of that game. I also really like that no matter how much damage your guy takes, even if he gets knocked out of action, he just comes back in. So again, it's kind of a little more forgiving that way. Now your opponent gets points for doing that, so you can't just sit there and lose that all day, but I like that mechanic a lot. So no matter how much you're getting creamed, it's not like in Blood Bowl where you come up against a bash team and you lose a couple key players and you're like, okay, well, now I've got another hour and a half of just getting my teeth kicked in, so this ought to be great. You know, it just doesn't feel like that. You never feel like you're really out of it, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
that's kind of what I've got in terms of playing and painting and stuff like that. You know, with Christmas, I actually ended up getting a 6x4 Killing Fields mat from Lisa. So I'm super excited to get that on. I'm not sure what game yet, but to get that on the table and play some stuff on that. Man, those mats are cool. I'm very happy that I got one. Have you been playing much on yours at all?
Not yet.
Not yet. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's you got to find a good game for it, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll work better with movement trays and that kind of thing, and I haven't played one like that recently. So
yeah, once you get back to your ACW, you know, sharp practice or something, maybe.
Right, right.
My parents gave me one of the Michael's like craft store, like the Christmas town type stuff. There's like a little mat that they have. I think it probably is 30x30. So I'm now wondering if that might not be a good thing for Company of Iron, but it's like a brick or a stone, like square, as in like a town square kind of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. So those are kind of neat. I have another one that I picked up a couple years back, and also a bunch of roads for it too. So I do have the stone and the brick roads, as well. So I could kind of do a lot with that, I think. I already mentioned the Oryx Warband for Shadespire, and Lisa also got me all of the sleeves for Shadespire, the official ones. So I've been using, you know, sleeving all the decks into those. They're actually not as, I don't know. You see a lot of pictures on the internet of people having trouble. I didn't have any problems with mine. They weren't too short or anything like that. The cards all fit in them just fine. So, I don't know. Maybe I got a good one. Maybe I just got good cards, or you know, that they're not miscut or anything. So I'm actually pretty happy with those. And they look really cool. So that's kind of worked out well.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with my cards either.
Yeah. She also got me the Blood and Plunder, the new Bark ship, which is a step down from the smallest actual ship that they made before, which was the Sloop. The Bark is a little bit smaller than that, which I think is actually a better size for 100-point starter games than the Sloop. I think it'll go a little bit faster. It's one of those things where you put 100 points down, each force goes into the Bark, and the game will go faster, so that by the time, you know, you get to the end of the game, the person is ready to play again, but with more figures. Like, they've got the idea of the game, and you're ready to play a full, like, 200-point game or whatever.
Yeah, I'm really excited to play it in 2018. We'll talk about it later.
Yep. And the last thing I've got in here is the new Will Smith movie. This is a straight to Netflix movie, Bright. And you saw this also, right?
That's true.
So this one, it just was released on a Netflix. It's starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton. Also, Noomi Rapace. I don't know how to say her last name. She was in Girl with Dragon Tattoo. She was the girl with the dragon tattoo in that. She was the title character.
She was the titular character.
Yeah, there you go. She was indeed. So, yeah, this one was exactly what I thought it was going to be.
It got a lot of hype everywhere because I think Netflix, they spent a good amount of money on it.
Yeah.
It's got Will Smith in it.
Right. Yeah, they really went for it. And it's a modern fantasy film, and so it's a buddy cop movie, very much in keeping with something like Bad Boys, but with orcs and elves and fairies and gnomes and
centaur.
You know, yeah, some cool centaurs and things like that. And it's all integrated, like it's no big deal that there are orcs everywhere. Certainly goes really, really heavy into the like racial tension in the very beginning, and I think that's going to turn a lot of people off. It's a heavy, just very heavy-handed. It just was not very subtle at all. But as the movie goes on, I think it was a fun adventure story set in a world that I wouldn't mind seeing more of. You know, if Netflix did a lower budget series of this without Will Smith, you know, just pick some other characters to kind of walk around and do weird things in this world, sort of. What was that detective, the wizard detective guy or whatever it was? That series of books, and then there was a short-lived television show.
Doctor Who?
No. It was a fantasy one. I can't remember the guy's name. I read a couple of the books, but I didn't get
super into them. Yeah,
The Dresden Files.
Yeah, Dresden Files. Yeah.
So if they did sort of a television series kind of in keeping with that, set in the world of Bright, I think I'd watch it. I sat down. I expected to get Bad Boys with Orcs. That's what I got. So I was totally happy with it.
So I watched it as well, and I didn't know what to expect other than the reviews for it had been horrendous.
Oh, wow.
People really like to bash it. And I think, honestly, I think people are definitely entitled to their opinions. And as someone who has an unpopular opinion sometimes, I think everyone's entitled to their opinions. I think, especially in the last few years and social media and big budgets and everything, people sometimes like to see something fail. And so you see mega games that come out, Star Wars Battlefront, which had legitimate issues, but other games that come out and people really like to bag on it. I watched Bright, and I didn't really know anything about it other than Will Smith was in it. I thought the story was pretty cool. I thought the world was pretty cool. I don't want to give any spoilers away, but excuse me. I thought it was a little bit, I think it could have been about 20 minutes or a half hour shorter. Mm-hmm. I think some of the acting was a little overdone too.
Yeah.
Like some of the parts where the cops were like, "You don't know what being a cop is." Yeah. And it was really like,
They did spend all their money on special effects and Will Smith. I mean, that's definitely true. But
yeah. I thought it was funny that Margaret Cho was in it.
Yeah. It was a strange.
There's some other cameos in it too that are funny, and the fantasy elements were pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the fighting scenes were pretty cool. It kind of reminded me of the whole style and everything reminded me of 2000s sci-fi action movies that came out, Underworld, mm-hmm. and those other.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is tough because I wasn't really a fan of Underworld. But it definitely reminded me of that as opposed to something like.
Yeah. Like Blade or Blade 2, kind of stuff. Yeah.
As opposed to something like the movie with the prawns in it.
District 9?
Yeah, District 9 or some of the other ones with like huge CGI and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So I think overall it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I gave it on a scale of a 10, I would think I would probably give it a 6 or a 7. I thought it was worth your time if you're a fantasy fan.
Yep.
Will Smith didn't really do his entire Will Smith thing, so I think that'd be good for some people,
right. Right. He didn't really go for it. I mean, he was one of the more restrained.
It could have been
worse than it was. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I would definitely say if you're interested in that kind of thing at all, or if you don't mind Will Smith, I mean, if you're a fan of the Bad Boy movies or whatever, and you already have Netflix, I mean, you got nothing to lose really. So,
right.
Go ahead and watch it. It's a fun, don't go into it with a ton of expectations. You said you didn't want to spoil it. I'm not sure how much of that movie you possibly could spoil that you wouldn't figure out by watching the first 10 minutes of it. Like, it didn't... I don't know. There weren't exactly twists and turns, but...
yeah, it definitely reminded me of The Fifth Element as well
in terms of really, story. I actually said Lilu Dallas multipass at one point because it was so reminiscent of... There's a certain scene, and it just really... really, really echoed back to that. So, but that's okay. I mean, if you're going to pull from something, that's not a bad thing to pull from.
I think, and you kind of said this, and I've heard this from other people, maybe if they had made it a 6-episode series as opposed to a movie,
mm-hmm.
it may have worked better for them. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot going on. Like you said, it could have been a lot shorter as maybe a, you know, a 1 hour television kind of thing, with the expectation to carry some of the stuff over into, you know, explore some of those threads a little bit more in detail later on. Some of the visuals were really stunning, though. I mean, they did a really good job. There's a point at the beginning where, you know, all of these bodies are like burned up and stuff, and there's some other stuff in that scene that are just really visually striking, and I think would be interesting to kind of explore more. You know, if they got somebody like Guillermo del Toro to come in and direct a couple episodes, I think they could really do something neat with that.
The last thing I want to say is they had a lot of pretty heavy stereotypes in it as well.
Yeah, they did.
The Mexican-American gangster people were like...
Yeah.
Like, straight out of, like, late 90s, early 2000s action movie, you know? And the orcs with all the jerseys and stuff.
Yeah. There's some definite silliness there. So, yeah, check it out if you're interested. Go into it with reasonably low expectations. I don't think you'll be too disappointed.
Yeah, I would agree. It also, one other thing, sorry. It also, I think, pushed a lot of people's buttons for Shadowrun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. It's that kind of thing. It doesn't have that, it's not quite Shadowrun, but it will, if that was something that you're into, it may kind of stir that within you.
Right. It's not far future tech, but it is, you know, street level orcs. And I didn't see a dwarf. Did you see any dwarves?
I thought I saw a gnome at one point when they were in the locker room at the police station. I thought one of the guys was a gnome in the background. Like you said, there's just kind of centaurs like around, and I thought it was cool that they didn't say anything. I mean, it was just there, and then you just kept moving through the story.
Like, oh my god, that guy's half horse.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I could go for a little more of it. I want to know why the elves are set up the way they are in the story, that kind of thing. I'd like to see that.
I agree.
Well, cool, man. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we're not going to go super long in this episode, but we'll talk a little bit about what's happened for us in 2017 and what we're looking forward to for the next year. Back, let's talk about our 2017 in review. There's a couple of questions that I just kind of jotted down. I want to go through some of those and just sort of talk them over. The first one I've got on here is, are there any new experience this past year, 2017, that are notable? And I think one for both of us is probably large historical war game specific convention. So for me, it was Historicon, and for you, it was Fall In.
This year was the first year I've been to Fall In. I've heard about it quite often from friends, and so I went to the Fall In convention. You can listen to all about my experience there in a past episode, but I had a lot of fun, and I plan to go back in 2018 as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a little harder for me to get to Historicon or Fall in the future, just because it is not going to be nearly as close moving from Fredericksburg up to Lancaster. But I did have a good time, and I would like to go back. I'm hoping to get back in 2018. I doubt that I actually will be able to, but certainly kind of going forward, I'd like to make the time to do that, because there are a lot of games there. You know, I didn't sign up for any games at Historicon. I just kind of showed up to check things out and hang out and see what there was to see. There's a lot of games there I'd really like to get into, a lot of periods that I'm interested in. Kind of like I was talking about World War II earlier, where I'd like to be able to play it without having to go ahead and just buy everything and get all the models and all the terrain and paint it and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I am looking forward to doing some more of that in the future.
Yeah, and it's a great way to test. I think I talked about this a little bit during the episode, but it's a great way to test out something that you're interested in investing in. So, like, mm-hmm. I played Congo, and I really liked it, and I had always thought about it. So, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
So while we're talking about conventions, it seems like this past year, so 2017, Adepticon was a very different experience for both of us than it has been in years past as well. I know I played a lot of things that I had never played before, including Sharp Practice with a big group. We did play one game leading up to that with a local group, but going to a con to play that, I got a chance to play, you know, 10 millimeter World War One, which is about the most obscure thing that I've done with historical wargaming so far, but it was a lot of fun. And World War One has become a period that I'm interested in that I was not terribly interested in before. What about you? What kind of new stuff did you do at Adepticon this past year?
So this last year, I kind of Adepticon is kind of our home convention in terms of it's in Chicago. We're in the Detroit area, so it's close enough. And this last year, I kind of determined that each year I want to try new stuff, whether it be entirely like nothing I did last year I'm going to do this year, or I'll just do one new thing this year compared to what I did last year. So I tried Frostgrave, which I really enjoyed. I did a Dark Age game.
We got that Wild West game?
Yes, yes, the Wild West game that was the old Games Workshop rules. So and Blood and Plunder as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I really want to go there and try out new things. I don't want to do, and this is entirely up to however people want to do it. Some people go there and they play the team tournament, and then they play Horus Heresy, or they play Horus Heresy the entire weekend, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But I kind of want to just do different things, and I want to, and I know a lot of gamers do this, use it as a reason to get projects done. So,
mm-hmm. So one of those projects was the Sharp Practice game that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And Sharp Practice is definitely a game that you have really dug into in 2017 with various projects, not just the French and Indian War game that we put on, but also with your Civil War as well.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite war game now. I mean, I think I can say that. Bolt Action is up there and a few other games, but Sharp Practice is definitely my favorite war game. And this last year, it's kind of been the game that I've thought about the most, if that's a thing to say. Yeah. I talk about it on Twitter all the time. I go on the forum and I read that. I subscribe to the Yahoo groups. I'm writing my own campaign, which this last few years I've kind of, had hobby goals. You know, I want to win a painting award. I want to do this. I want to make a podcast, which you gave me the opportunity to help out on that kind of thing. And one of the other things is I want to start writing things. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm the next Hemingway or anything, but I think I can contribute something in terms of writing something for my hobby. So, mm-hmm. Sharp Practice is kind of giving me that what do they say? It's my muse or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that means, but it's kind of pushing me towards a lot of those things. So.
Yeah, I feel like Shadespire has come in and kicked me right in the muse button as well, in a way that I certainly did not expect it to. It has been a game that I have put some thought into and hope to be doing some more in 2018 in terms of maybe writing out some blog articles and things like that. I'm not a master strategist. I'm not, not going to be number one in the world at this game, but I think about it. I've got some thoughts in my head that I'd like to get down on paper and hopefully at the very least someone that's just starting out may find some of it useful to them to enjoy the game a little bit more.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's also been, in terms of, you know, Shadespire taking off, we've talked about some games on here that took off and then burned out really fast, mm-hmm. and like Star Wars Destiny.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an unpopular opinion that it has problems now, and and maybe it's just because I'm a wargamer at heart, but I don't see that problem happening with me for Shadespire.
Yeah, I certainly hope not. I mean, I think we're kind of hitting a lull since it's been a while since we've had a new release. I think the FAQ probably did a lot to kind of keep people going now. I'm hoping to see another release mid-January or so of another two factions. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of excitement around the Skaven and Dwarves in particular for a lot of people. People holding out saying, well, I'll jump in when this, you know, X or Y drops, and Skaven and Dwarves are two of those things that I hear a lot. So, I know for me, it was the undead were what kind of pushed me into it, cause the models were so fantastic. I know you're a big fan of Skaven. I am as well. So, you know, I hope that helps propel the game, to another level. I hope that it can maintain that momentum going all the way to Adepticon. I mean, it's a long time between now and March, and a lot of people, 124 people that were excited about, you know, Shadespire back when signups went up in October. I hope those people are still as excited, if not those people, then at least 124 other people are still that excited when the time actually comes to play. So yeah, that's definitely one on the list for 2018. So then what, we mentioned Shadespire as being a new game from 2017 that we were most excited about. What else dropped in 2017 that really kind of tickled your fancy in a way that you're excited to keep going with it? Not one that's sort of fizzled out for you.
Right. I think 40K definitely, despite some of the flaws that it has, and I think those are well acknowledged flaws now. Mm-hmm. I think it still revitalized the game for a lot of people, including myself.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to be that thing where I play every week mm-hmm. at a store with random people mm-hmm. again.
Yep.
Like, and a lot of that's because of my own schedule now. I have kids and all that
stuff. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, actually. Could I ever go back to playing 40K the way that I used to, where it was, you know, kind of a one and only game for me? And at this point, could I even go back to having a one and only game? Because I'm just not a one-game kind of guy anymore, I think.
Polygamerous?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it's, and I don't mean it in a bad way. It's an arrow in my quiver now. It's not, you know, the missile in my launcher.
who's polygamerous now?
One of the other things.
Yeah, no, I agree with that though. I think that is an apt analogy, I guess, as far as such things can be.
One of the other games that I'm really excited about, and unfortunately, I just haven't had a lot of playtime with it, is Blood and Plunder, and I think you have had a lot more.
Yeah. Not as much as I want. I mean, it's the thing that I keep coming back to. It is the game. It is the closest thing to a main game, for me that I want to have. It is not a main game for me right now. I think Shadespire might actually be closer to that just because I can play with Lisa at home. So I get games in more frequently. And actually that's the only way I'm getting games right now, but I really want Blood and Plunder to be a main game for me. I want to kind of really dig into it and figure out just different ways of playing it in terms of pushing narrative. I'm really interested in writing a map campaign for it where each player starts with their own little slice of the Caribbean there, the Caribbean, whichever you prefer. I'm told Caribbean, actually, but... But yeah, I really wanted to knock something out with that, but certainly I am very excited about Blood and Plunder, but I just don't get it to the table quite as often as I'd like to. And then you know, I was very interested in Company of Iron for the same reason that I mentioned earlier. It feels like the game that I wanted War Machine to be all along. So who knows what the future holds for that. But I am glad that you seem to really be liking it as a guy that's kind of invested in War Machine and Hordes.
Yeah, it's going to be something that I'm going to go back to definitely in 2018 and maybe even buy some new models from a different faction and paint those up. And, you know, it might be minions or things that I can use with my Scorn as well. So I'm excited.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what are some of the games that have been around for a little bit longer that you've just sort of discovered in 2017 and want to carry some excitement forward for?
So one of them is Congo. I talked about this a little bit earlier. I believe that was mm-hmm. released in 2016, so it's not a super old game.
Right.
I was always, to be honest with you, I was kind of leery about the whole, you know, glorifying mm-hmm. The empire or subjugation of people and all of that kind of thing. And I really think I can get along with this game, and I think it was definitely written without that in mind. It was not written mm-hmm. to be something, you know, anyway, it states in the rules, this is not written to glorify what happened or what was done to certain peoples. It is an adventure game, you know? So, I'm excited to get going on that in 2018. I am painting some guys for a game, in early February, Super Bowl weekend, so I should probably start that.
Yeah, it's going to come up pretty fast. You paint pretty quickly, though, so you should be able to knock it out if you can dedicate a couple evenings or weekends to it. What else you got on your list?
I put in here Commands and Colors Napoleonics. This has been a game, you know, that Command and Colors type of game has been around, I want to say, for a little while at least. And mm-hmm. it was very popular on Twitter for a couple months. Like, people were talking about, well, I just bought all the Command and Color Napoleonic boxes. Here they are. And so I picked one up, and it's a really fun game, and it's very simple. I had played Battlecry, which is the Civil War version of it, before, and it had miniatures, mm-hmm. and I just didn't click with it. And mm-hmm. with the Napoleonic.
You prefer the wooden blocks?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I think they look cool. And, yeah. I'm actually in a Facebook group that's called, like, Wooden Blocks or something like that, and it's just about that kind of game. So I really enjoy it. I think the designer, Richard Borg, does a great job with it. So I'm going to mm-hmm. play it some more. And it's easy to play. The only thing is just setting up all those wooden blocks, I think. It takes a little bit of time, so.
Yeah, yeah. And now this last one here is something I picked up the rules when it came out, but never really, and still haven't gotten a chance to play it. Frostgrave.
That's right.
Something that you've kind of recently picked up. That's a little bit older, not super old, but a little bit older.
Yeah, it's fairly new, and I had also picked it up when it first came out. It's super well affordable, so it's not something that's going to break your bank. And I had read a lot about it when it first came out. I just hadn't invested the time in playing mm-hmm. it or, you know, painting certain models for it. So I played that Adepticon. It was really fun. It's really easy to play. It's not something that you have to spend all of your time figuring out how to play it. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm excited to play it some more in 2018 as well.
I have a feeling this is something that we've talked about a lot recently as a group. We have sort of not a great track record with campaigns. You know how it is. We're all polygamerous. And so you start a campaign, you get a week or two in, and then everybody's on to the next thing. I think Frostgrave is going to be a great game to do a campaign in a day, though, even if it's only, you know, four games or whatever over the course of a day, and just knowing that is going to be it. And you're going to go from start to finish in that amount of time, I think would be really fun to do. I do need to get miniatures built and painted for it, though. There's just really not a good excuse not to have a Frostgrave warband just kind of on tap at all times, because I feel like that's something that could really, really come in handy. I mean, it's a popular enough game that a lot of different groups are playing it, so I really should have one ready to go.
Yeah, I agree.
So then looking forward to 2018, a lot of this stuff we've already kind of alluded to, but what would you say is at the top of your list, like the thing that you're most excited for in 2018?
Oh, man. I wrote out a bunch of stuff, but...
And now you have to pick one to be your most excited thing.
I think my favorite thing to look forward to in 2018 is wargaming.
Okay. No. Well played. Not playing Pokemon cards with your kid?
No. I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd like to knock out another army for sharp practice, which I didn't put in here. But I'd like mm-hmm. to do some Napoleonics for that. I didn't also didn't list in my outline Forager, but that should be that should be on my doorstep in the next few days or week or soon, very soon. So I'm really excited mm-hmm. to give that a try. Being mm-hmm. you know, one on one or man to man skirmish level Napoleonic or Black Powder period. I'm going to power through all of my Blood and Plunder guys and get them painted and ships and really get that going. Mm-hmm. I want to try Hobbit Battle Companies as well as maintain, you know, painting some 40K stuff, painting some Age of Sigmar stuff, you know, Shadespire when the new stuff comes out for that. There's so many things on the mm-hmm. list.
You've got a big Gangs of Rome order in, right?
That's right. I did. I put in for... not everything. A bunch of miniatures. I didn't get any terrain. I figured I would, you know, see how it goes and mm-hmm. then get some terrain later. Mm-hmm. And I do have some, like, Mediterranean-looking terrain, so mm-hmm. I'm excited to try that.
That's definitely one of the ones that I'm eager to hear you report back on. I kind of been, like, subtly floating it out to the group every once in a while and just nothing. Just crickets, tumbleweed... whatever. No one seems to really want to get into that game, so I'm gonna have to live vicariously through you, I think, on that one. Because it's such a low model count, again, it's one of those things where if I pick up you know, a pack of five dudes or whatever down the road, the rules are out right now for free, so you can take a look at them, and I encourage you to do that if you haven't already. Not you, Michael, the folks listening, because I know you've already looked at them because you sent them to me.
Gentle listener.
Yeah, gentle listener. But definitely go take a look at that. But I think down the road I will pick up, you know, a pack or two of those minis just to kind of have on hand for things like Adepticon where I could just get into a game of it, you know.
Yeah, I think, and I have not read the Two Fat Lardies special yet, the Christmas special, but... Mm-hmm. I read like the last page of it, and Rich said something about the question was posed to him, you know, what does the future hold for Two Fat Lardies? And he said something about, you know, we're going to work on these rule sets. And also, I think more and more you're going to see more skirmish level games come out with, you know, fewer than 50 figures on each side. And I think, again, that'll hold true for me as well in 2018. If you look at the things I'm interested in, Hobbit Battle Companies, Gangs of Rome. There's a new Vanguard rule set for Kings of War Skirmish. A modern rule set I want to get into, either Skirmish Sangin. I have the stuff. I just need mm-hmm. to learn how to play mm-hmm. Spectre Operations or Black Ops, you know.
And they did just come out with plausible deniability for Sangin too, so.
Exactly. And Forager, I think more and Shadespire even, we're going to be playing games with a, you know, not army size or even platoon size. We're going to be playing at much smaller scales. Mm-hmm. And it's just easier because I can paint 10 men of Gondor in a week and play a game. And maybe they sit on my shelf for a few months and I don't have the overwhelming, mm-hmm. You know, depression of I haven't validated my purchase.
Right, right. Yeah, Blood and Plunder is probably, and I think that's maybe why, you know, it's going to be the closest thing to the game for me, the main game, is because of the ultimately by the time I'm actually done, not when I keep saying I'm done, but really I just base coated and washed a bunch of dudes, but like actually have it to a reasonable done point, there will be a fair amount of investment with painting all the miniatures. I have to get terrain for it. I don't have a bunch of suitable terrain for it. And then, of course, painting the ships and doing all the rigging and all that kind of stuff. It's definitely going to be the biggest game sort of that I have outside of the bigger Games Workshop games, which for me is 40K. I don't have a ton of fantasy, or I don't have any of the New Age of Sigmar stuff, but the amount of fantasy that I have is fairly low. So yeah, I think Blood and Plunder will definitely be the big game, but like you, I'm interested in a lot of those smaller games. I'm very excited about Forager to see how that actually plays. We'll see. I mean, I might end up with a World War II army, if not in 2018, maybe 2019 for Chain of Command. You know, I'll wait for like a Black Tree sale or something and pick up enough dudes to sort of get started. Probably just do a very simple paint job on all of them, you know, just sort of base coat and wash, and then just completely just call them done, and they're just really, you know, dirty in the field or whatever, and not worry about it too much. But yeah,
World War II models are really easy to kick out.
That's what it looks like. That's what I'm told. I mean, you know, a lot of people do a great job with a lot of their models, but I think being able to achieve just a decent tabletop level pretty quickly and effectively, there's a lot of appeal mm-hmm. to that. And as we said before, it's a very popular time period. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like the models are going to go bad or anything. I'll always be able to find a World War II game to right. play, you know, 28 millimeters. So,
yeah, yeah.
And then as we said before, just kind of getting back into doing more blogging. I haven't done a whole lot. I know you've done quite a bit in the past, but I'd really like to start writing a little bit more, both for Shadespire and for Blood and Plunder. I'm very interested in the history of it, of course. And so as I look into it and as I watch things like National Geographic specials on, you know, sunken ships and all that kind of stuff, it really kind of jazzes me up and gets me excited about the period and the pirates and stuff. So
people love reading research articles, and not only, you know, here's the stuff that I figured out, but how you figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wrote an article, a series of articles when I was painting my U.S. Marine Corps for Tarawa for bolt action, and I included a lot of the sources and things, and it was I got some of my best comments ever on that blog series because I had gone pretty in depth, read some books and watched some, you know, primary source film and that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll hear people say, well, it's 2017 or it's 2018, do people really still read blogs? And I can assure you they definitely do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, I think for me, whether people are reading it or not, I would I would really just like to get into writing. I think it'll be good for me as a hobbyist and just personally to write a little bit more. So, you know, if it's just me sending you a link every month or whatever because I wrote a thing, that's fine with me too. You got to keep my brain working somehow. So, so I think that'll be good. I know you got some other stuff in here too, some magazines and video games as well, coming up for 2018 that you're looking forward to. Do you have a subscription currently to any of the historical wargaming magazines, Wargame Soldiers and Strategies, or any of that kind of stuff, Wargames Illustrated?
I do, and I'd like to do an episode on this in the future. I really enjoy Wargame Soldiers and Strategy. Mm-hmm. I have a subscription to that. It flies to my house from Denmark, I think, maybe. And it's a great magazine. I love it.
Holland, I also, think, but yeah.
Yeah. I get them mixed up.
one has Vikings and the other has you know, wooden marijuana shoes. And red light districts.
Yeah. I also I pick up
War Games Illustrated most of the times when it comes out at the hobby shop. If there's nothing in there I really want, then I won't get it. And I also usually pick up the White Dwarf, because in the last, I was always a buyer of it, and then they switched formats a few times, and it was quite honestly not worth buying for a while.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster in recent years.
And then the last year or so, it's been pretty great. Yeah. I really like it. Yeah. I also
that kind of goes for Games Workshop in general, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's reflection of the overall. I mean they still have some bumps in the road. They still have some things they need to work on, but White Dwarf has been pretty great. And I also pick up the Privateer Press magazine Prime, which I think the second issue just came out, and it's really good. It's a lot of the things when people were saying White Dwarf is no good, it used to do this, it used to do that, they should do this, they should do that. No Quarter and Prime have been those things. So
it's kind of neat. I'll have to take a look at that sometime. Well, I'll tell you what, I think that just about wraps it up for me. Do us a favor, hop on over to the Combined Arms Podcast Facebook page and just, you know, let us know what were your highlights from 2017. What are you looking forward to in 2018?
Yeah, we're definitely glad to hear about that. And anything that you would like to, you know, hear about on the podcast, we're always happy to hear about that. So,
well, thank you for joining us on episode 9 of the Combined Arms Podcast. It's been a really exciting year for us, just kind of getting the show going, and we really appreciate all of you listening and supporting us.
Thanks, everyone.